Partly cloudy skies at 81 degrees. Welcome to this Friday edition of Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. We begin with this. The qualifying period for Atlanta City races ends today. That includes candidates for November's election and here in Atlanta, the next mayor. So here's how it works. Candidates had to pay a qualifying fee to get on the November ballot, or they could submit a petition with enough signatures on it. Earlier in the week, here's something kind of interesting. Current Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed told local radio station V103 none of the mayoral candidates could beat him if he was in the race. Mayor Reed said, quote, "I beat them all. Let's be really clear. Nobody running for mayor could beat me." In other news, it's open for business. Gates at Mercedes-Benz Stadium will officially open tomorrow for a preseason NFL game. There's a lot of excitement around the new sports venue and its design. Earlier this summer, I spoke with Dietmar Exler, CEO of Mercedes-Benz USA, about opening day.
It's pretty awesome. It is pretty awesome. And, I mean, I hear some stats, you know, from Steve Cannon, how this stadium compares, whether it's with the, you know, miles of, you know, fiber cables, where we are so far off. Everybody at a stadium was the size of the video screen, which is pretty cool. But for us, you know, kind of the most important thing in that whole partnership with the Blank organization is the focus of the Blank organization on the fan experience. Whether it's street-level pricing in the stadium, you know, kind of for food or other things, all this thinking goes to give the fans the best experience they can have. That is pretty cool, pretty awesome. And I can't wait, actually, till we have the first games here.
Well, if you have a ticket, enjoy. If not, just hang out. There's a very, very large bird in front of the dome that you can take pictures in front of. The Atlanta Falcons face the Arizona Cardinals tomorrow night at 7 p.m. in their new home. This is Closer Look. And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. A while back on the program, I spoke with engineer and inventor Lonnie Johnson, and he talked about the importance of getting youth involved in exploring and creating their own inventions and their own businesses. Well, some students in the Indus Entrepreneurs Youth Program are doing just that. They won a global entrepreneurship competition, taking home $10,000, and they brought the check to show me, kind of showed up, and along with some contracts with some major clients. What did they come up with? Chill Wipes. They're going to tell me all about it. Members of the Chill Wipes team join me in studio to talk about their business. We have Anana Ganesh, we have Shreya Rekapali, we have Anasha Cortana, and also joining us is the co-founder of the youth program and current president of TAI, Kashna Raman. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
My question for the students, how come y'all not in school?
Excused absence.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right. Congratulations, y'all.
Thank you so much.
Kashna, I want to start with you because this is a volunteer position that you're doing. You're working with these youth, but you're also an entrepreneur yourself. So connect the dots and connect the dots for me in terms of why it's so important for you to give back to the youth that are involved in this entrepreneurs program.
First of all, thank you, Rose and WAB, for having us. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here on radio. And yes, I think I should credit a lot of it to the organization TAI, TIE. Mm-hmm. It's a global organization. And the stakeholders of the organizations are called charter members or charter mentors, and I'm one of them. And our mission and vision is really to empower entrepreneurship and foster entrepreneurship through education, mentoring, and networking. And of course, with time, you know, the age of the entrepreneur has gotten younger. Mm-hmm. So we extended our program to the high school students starting in ninth grade. As you can see, the current trend, I mean, you have kids who are 10, 12, 13 talking about entrepreneurship. I myself started as an entrepreneur in my 20s, but I do realize things have changed now.
How many kids are in the program?
So we have graduated about 300 kids, and this is our seventh year.
Wow. Is it tough to decide? First of all, does everyone who wants to be involved, are they accepted? Do they have to submit any type of application or anything, or you just take everybody?
So we go through an application process, and we focus on three things: diversity, both in terms of race and gender. Mm-hmm. As you can see, we are an all-female team over here today, but we do have very qualified boys in the program, young men in the program as well, and also economic diversity. That's very important at TIE, because most of us are serial entrepreneurs, and we feel responsible to reach out and mentor and change lives wherever possible.
Well, let me talk to the students, and Sharia, I'll start with you. Why'd you want to join this program?
I first wanted to join this program. I'd taken some business classes in high school, but, you know, we just sit there, we learn, they lecture. It's nothing really clear cut. And so I kind of wanted to explore, go into the business world, see what it's really like. And a few of my friends had done TIE in the past, and they told me about it. So that's how I kind of stumbled upon this.
And Anaya, what about you?
Anushka,
I'm sorry.
And my older brother had actually done this program, and he enjoyed it a lot. Except I also took, like Shreya, at my school, I took many business classes, and I really enjoyed, starting the concept of starting up your own company. And I wanted to do it in the real world, like not just take a class for it. So TIE was really an amazing program for me.
And now, Ananya, what about you?
Absolutely. So I actually heard about TIE through my school. It's TIE's held at Westminster, mm-hmm. and I heard about it through the announcements, and I found it really interesting that there was an entrepreneur program for high schoolers, because before TIE, I thought that to start a business, you had to have an MBA and have a world-changing product. But then going through this program, I realized that you just have to be passionate about what you're doing and willing to put in the work, and that can happen at any age.
How old are y'all?
I'm 15.
15?
I'm 15 as well.
15?
I'm 16.
I was a camp counselor when I was 16, which is important as well. Let's talk about the competition. And Kanchana, tell us how all this comes together. So there's a global competition, right? How do you decide which of the teams within your own local chapter will get to participate?
So we go through 16 Sundays. So we start with the school year in September and we end in April. And TIE has 61 global chapters. And I think the high school program is probably in about 25 to 30 chapters, as far reaching as Hong Kong, Japan, India, London. So we start here with about 40 kids, and we form teams right off the gate, and we start the ideation process, business plan, canvas, teach them finances, we basically mentor them from day one.
And do they come up with the concept for the business, and you help them with the business plan and all of that?
For the most part, they come up with the ideas. And of course, like I said, we go through the ideation process, and we, knock out a few of them. And then we help them with whatever we think is a idea that can be brought to fruition.
Well, let's talk about the team then. And Sharia, I'll ask you, working with the team, how did you solve if there was a dispute or if you had a mm-hmm. difference of opinion about a product? How did you all work through that?
So we first, in the very beginning, we couldn't decide on a product for a long, long, long time. But with the help of our mentors, Jim Beach and Amin, we had a few ideas. They kind of told us what would be feasible, what's actually like doable for kids like us. And that's how we kind of came up with Chill Wipes. It's all something that we had in common because we're all athletes.
Mm-hmm. So which I totally love.
Yeah. So that's how we kind of decided on this idea. And as far as disputes go, to be honest, there weren't really many, so it was kind of a smooth road for us.
So, Anushka, take us through Chill Wipes.
All right, so we came up with the title because they're wipes that not only wipe your sweat, but they also cool your body down. So we decided to call them Chill Wipes because they kind of cool your body down. And so this product, we came up with this, like Shreya was saying, it took us a little bit of time to really, wrap our mind around, like, we're going to create a wipe that does it. And also, I think at first we were thinking bigger ideas, and we decided that we could do something small and make it just as successful.
Anaya, let me ask you this. So y'all come up with Chill Wipes. During this process in the team, everyone has a different sort of role. And if so, what was your role?
Yes, I was the chief executive officer of Chill
Wipes. I like that. The CEO. Our CEO, Wanya Lucas, would love to hear that.
Absolutely.
So as CEO of what was your vision? What was your mission?
Yeah, so my vision and my mission was really just to keep the team on track. and really just delegate the jobs, like finding people's strengths, finding people's weaknesses. And that sometimes means stepping back myself, and that means pushing someone maybe out of their comfort zone, but knowing that they're able to do that. And I think that we as a team did that really well because we were able to come through in the end.
Kanchana, what are the, I guess, judges or in the competition, what are they looking for to decide who, first of all, is going to be a finalist, and how do they decide, you know, who wins? I mean, what is it based on?
So we have about 6 to 7 teams each year competing here in Atlanta from the program. So there are about 7 ideas that have come, you know, that have been developed over a period of 10 months, and several mentors participate in it. And we follow the Thai Global lead, where many years ago it was, you know, more like solving bigger problems like water sustainability and things like that. But now we have changed in the last 2 years, where we want an idea more like, you know, we want a prototype of an idea. So children start developing, like how you're seeing chill wipes over here. Mm-hmm. So we develop a product, we put it on the table. The judges, we have a panel of 6 to 12 judges sometimes. And most of them are serial entrepreneurs or intrapreneurs.
Is the competition here in the United States or is somewhere?
The Atlanta competition happens right here in mm-hmm. Georgia. And then we go globally to compete with the global teams. So it could be sometimes outside the United States, many times in the U.S.
And the entire team travels?
They travel. And sometimes what we also do is we just have, if you're not able to travel, we do have remote options as well.
Now, Sheree, let me ask you this. You're in the global competition now. Are you all nervous? Do you get to this point where, do you change anything? Do you just go with the flow? I mean, what's that feeling like when you're in the midst of this competition?
Yeah, we got to sit through the first few like presentations. We were kind of in the middle. So yeah, it was definitely very nerve-wracking for all of us. We were sitting there like, oh my God, they're so good. And we were kind of freaking out on the inside. But at the same time, we've been practicing for almost 2-3 weeks, just straight going past on this. So we were pretty confident when we went in.
Do you all give a presentation, or is it just a spokesperson? Is it all on the CEO to sell the product?
No, so we actually put together a 15-minute presentation, and then when we presented, we had a 10-minute question and answer with the judges. And we also had, there were different aspects of the competition. So you have the main competition, and then you had the best lean canvas and the best elevator pitch, and we were fortunate enough to also win the best elevator pitch.
Wow, what was it like? What kind of questions did the judges ask you?
The judges actually, compared to the other groups, they didn't have way too many questions for us, but just mostly about how people reacted to our product, how many like people we had try, like how many mm-hmm. trial runs we had, stuff like that. And also in terms of reactivity to the skin, I think that was one big problem with the judges, but it ended up working out great.
And these chill wipes, was there a lot of research in terms of what kind of material was going to be made out
absolutely,
of? Did you do
yes.
a
absolutely.
Test sample? I
Many.
Mean, you went through all of that?
Yes, yeah. absolutely. And the big thing with chill wipes is we wanted to keep it very natural. So we actually studied plant oils that had the ability to reduce the surface body temperature.
You
and
studied plant oils?
Yes.
Yes.
It was very interesting.
Yes.
And not only that, but when you're outside and you're sweating, you wipe off that sunscreen mm-hmm. off your face. And so we wanted to find a plant-based oil that could protect you from the UV rays from the sun also.
Let's talk about the moment you realized you all won. What was that like? What's that process like? Do they just, is it like American Idol and there's a guy that says, in first place?
I definitely felt like I was on American Idol. But it was honestly such... so much excitement, yeah. I think, not only for me, but the rest mm-hmm. of our group. And it was wonderful being able to go up there. And we also made so many friends in mm-hmm. Globals, like the kids there. They were just like us. They were having so much fun. It was a great experience. But
Kanchana, one of your teams won this global competition. What's going through your mind when you realize that?
Joy and anxiety. It's like I go through this every year. So this is the second time in 7 years we have won globals. So
wow.
One of the teams 3 years ago won globals as well. But I think for the kids who participate through the program, you know, our mission and vision is to educate and make each one of them a real life entrepreneur. That I think is success.
So what's next?
We want to start the company.
Really?
We want to go through with this, absolutely.
That's what you will use the $10,000 for?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
100%.
You're going to party a little bit, though, right?
Yeah, of course.
Invite some friends over, you know, some pizza and, you know.
Yeah.
You going to start the company? You still want to stay as CEO?
I would like to.
Yeah.
Would
like She's to. A good CEO. For yeah. sure.
Really?
Yes.
Now, you know they're saying that because they're sitting here. Okay, starting the company, you're also still in school. So mm-hmm. how are you going to balance all of this?
We haven't, like,
I've talked to some, I talked to my teachers about it, and they're very supportive. They want me to go through with it. And they say that I have 100% their support. So that's amazing that I get that support from my school.
It's a little different for me. I mean, I go to both Westminster and my high school are very, you know, tough schools, and they require, of course, a lot of studying to do well in. So it'll be hard to balance it, but I think we've gotten up to this point, and it's important to go on.
Sharia, mm-hmm. can you balance running a company and being a high school student and an athlete and all that?
Let's hope so. I think that definitely we all have that passion for this, so that's what's really going to drive us to the end point. So I think it'll be hard, for sure, but it's something that we definitely want to do.
And you have a patent for this, right?
We're actually protected under a trade secret. So uh-huh. usually with products like these, instead of having a patent where someone could just steal your idea, we have it under a trade secret where we guarantee that all the ingredients are all natural, but we make sure that no other product can they can't replicate it.
If you need a spokesperson, Lois Rices is right around the corner there. I think she'd be a perfect spokesperson.
And
if she's not available, then, you know, there's always H. Johnson, who does our jazz and blues classics. And if you really just are desperate, me.
We would be, that would be amazing to just have you too.
Ladies, as we wrap up, just tell me about the experience of all of this and what it means for you and your young lives right now.
It was an emotional roller coaster for me, I can say that. There were times where I think all of us felt this. We were all frustrated sometimes. We were happy. But I think in the end, we came together as a team, and we were able to get the job done. And we had the support of our family, of our friends, of our schools, of our mentors, Mr. Rahman, Mr. Beach, and Mr. Sadruddin. I'd just like to thank all of them. And it's been an amazing journey, and we can't wait to see where this takes us.
Absolutely. I agree with the Nanya. It was tough, the long nights of hard work, but I think it definitely paid off in the end, and we're glad we got up to this point.
Mm-hmm. Sheree, what about you?
I echo both of their thoughts. It was definitely a long, drawn-out process, which I feel like took forever, but it was so much fun when we got there. Mm-hmm. It was one of the best experiences I've ever had.
And Concha, I know you're proud of all your teams, but again, you have another global championship. So what does this do for the maybe next year's competition and motivating the teams to duplicate it or just to getting involved?
I think to just see them successful and that, you know, they can participate in Thai Atlanta's internship program, mentoring, funding. It's like one-stop shop. I mean, we got it all at Thai Atlanta. So the kids, we want to see them successful.
Concha, Aneshka, Sharia, Ananya, thank you all for coming in and taking the time. And congratulations. And let's keep it going.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Support for WABE comes from Reliable Heating and Air, a Train dealer. A family company since 1978, offering heating and air, plumbing, electrical, and duct cleaning 24 hours a day. Learn more at reliableair.com. And from the 2017 AJC Decatur Book Festival, featuring superheroes, parade storytelling, little golden books, and baby cows on Labor Day weekend, September 1st through 3rd in downtown Decatur. You can plan your DBF at decaturbookfestival.com.
This is Closer Look on 90.1 WABE. Did you miss some of today's interview? Don't worry. Catch each day's show at wabe.org/closerlook. Again, wabe.org/closerlook. Send our host, Rose Scott, an email at rose@wabe.org. There's more Closer Look ahead on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR.
My name is Hawa and I live in Claxton. One thing I like about Claxton is a diversity city, and there is many other people come from other countries. I have a lot of friends from different backgrounds. Like Clarkstone feel like to me is like an immigration center, like where some people from other country and you get to meet friends and get to know other people from other nation. If I would change anything about Clarkstone, I would change like about the school where I go. Like we have to have a new building and new stuff like this.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Belgian authorities say they warned officials in Spain over a year ago about an imam who appears to be at the root of the recent terrorist attacks in Barcelona and Cambrils. Those attacks killed 15 people last week. We'll talk about the history of terrorism in Spain, from Islamist extremists to Basque separatist groups. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon at 3 on 90.1 WABE.
Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE. I'm Rose Scott. A word of caution, this next segment may contain descriptions of sexual abuse. For more than two decades, journalist Jim DeRogatis had covered ongoing allegations of sexual misconduct by singer R. Kelly. We actually spoke about it last month.
It wasn't one videotape. It wasn't one woman. It wasn't just Aaliyah. We're talking about dozens of young African-American lives ruined since the mid-90s, in full view of the world. And Live Nation, the biggest corporate concert promoter in the United, in the world, is making money selling tickets to that show that's coming outside of Atlanta.
Now, that concert is tonight, and R. Kelly is still scheduled to perform at Wolf Creek Amphitheater. The concert's promoter, Live Nation, was asked to cancel tonight's show by the Fulton County Commission. The county actually owns the venue. Activists, along with an online petition, also called for tonight's show to be canceled. Kenyette Barnes is the organizer of Mute R. Kelly, and she joins me now in studio. Kenyette, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into tonight's planned protest, I want to first begin by asking why you decided to create the Mute R. Kelly. Should we call it a protest? Should we call it a movement?
It's a campaign. It's a movement. It's all of the above. Mute R. Kelly actually started pretty organically. And it was myself and a couple of other sisters in Atlanta who just were on the ground trying to do work around sex trafficking and just making everyone know that, you know, this is happening. And it started, the campaign started actually with my sister Ornika and I. We had never met. Mm-hmm. And we had sort of, in our own individual spaces, started using our own, you know, personal social media to start talking a little bit about our disdain for what Jim has said in his ongoing pieces about R. Kelly. And we decided to, we connected on social media and decided to have coffee and said, let's just sit down and see what we're thinking. And then at that point, that's where the campaign was launched. And it was really a very organic conversation at a Grant Park coffee shop. Mm-hmm. We were sitting there and said, okay, let's do it.
Why the correlation between child sex trafficking and singer R. Kelly?
A couple of reasons. Unfortunately, Atlanta is known for a lot of things. One of those is that we are the hub of underage domestic sex trafficking. And when I say domestic, when we talk about sex trafficking, when it first became, it hit our radar, it was mostly Eastern European young ladies who were coming out of the former Soviet Union, individuals from some of the South American countries and some of the South Asian countries. But when we're talking about sex trafficking in Atlanta, we're talking about young black girls, primarily between the ages of 13 and 19. And these happen to be the same population of young women that seem to be, to quote former Chairman Eaves, caught up in the swirl of controversy around R. Kelly's history of almost perennial sexual, you know, behavior. Mm-hmm. And so for us, it was just enough is enough. Arnika comes from the artist world. She is an artist. And for her, it was, as an artist, I need to stand up and say that we can't always defer to artistic license and the the right for free speech and freedom of expression. We can't always do that. And even as an artist, you have to be able to say, this is a platform that you have to influence a lot of people. And when you're using that platform to essentially be predatory, you need to be called out. And so that was sort of the motivation to get this started. And more personally, I do come from having a personal experience with child exploitation. So that all of that sort of together what led to this.
You're a survivor of being exploited?
I'm a survivor of child pornography, yes.
This is personal for you as
very
well.
Very personal, yes.
There has been so much conversation, and we've talked about it here on this program, in terms of R. Kelly has never technically been convicted of anything.
Yes.
And his music is still very popular, obviously.
Yes.
He has a lot of fans. And the whole notion that we're talking about women of color, young women of color as well. There's a lot of tentacles attached to this.
Absolutely.
The feedback from both sides, those who support R. Kelly, those who say, you know, they're in support of what you're doing. But in terms of those who are supporting R. Kelly and say it's unfair to target him, what's your response been?
In addition to doing Mute R. Kelly, I have a very active political consulting firm, and I'm very active in social justice movements in this area. And last I checked, the Black Lives Matter march, the march against Trayvon Martin, these all were people who were not convicted. We have a history in our country of individuals who lynched people of color who were not convicted. Yet that didn't stop people from marching. It didn't stop an entire movement. And why is this? Because we understand that we live under the umbrella of white supremacy, and that with the protection of white supremacy, you also have sometimes judicial protections that normally you would not get any otherwise. Connect us to R. Kelly. We also live under the umbrella of patriarchy. We live under the umbrella that black girls and women are usually the first exploited and the last protected and believed. So include that umbrella of patriarchy and his celebrity status and the ability to buy the best lawyers to get him off. Yeah, we see that this is as big of a problem as the other.
So for tonight's protest, you all will be on the grounds of the venue?
Yes.
You're properly permitted?
According to the First Amendment, yes, we are. We are actually going to be, just logistically, we're not going to be inside of the concert hall. You'd have to have a ticket to get in there. But we will be highly visible outside of the venue. And because of the setup of Wolf Creek, they don't have the luxury of closing a door. So we're going to be there and we're going to be visible.
I understand that one of the parents of the young women who was yes. included in the article, she'll be joining you as well.
Yes, Jay Savage and her family, and also a couple of other family members will be joining us at the protest as well.
When you say protests, we all just be carrying signs, chanting? Will there be guest speakers?
All of the above. Yes.
What's been the feedback in general to you?
It's been mixed. As you know, the biggest supporter that we have is definitely former county commissioner John Eaves and the Fulton County commissioner who, upon lobbying them to cancel the commission Live Nation to cancel the concert, was very supportive of that, gave us the unanimous vote to, yes, let's, you know, ask Live Nation to cancel this concert. So that's probably our biggest supporter. We've gotten a lot of support from the social justice world. The National Action Network is supporting us. The Georgia Alliance for Social Justice is supporting us. So there are a lot of people on the ground that really are saying, you know what, this is larger than a concert. This is a social justice issue. In addition, we've gotten some pretty colorful, you know, feedback, and, you know, it kind of, you know, sort of exist in maybe three veins. The first is, of course, the criminal issue. Well, he's never been convicted. The next is, of course, well, these girls are all adults. The third is, well, what about Hugh Hefner? That's always funny. And the fourth, and probably the most controversial, is, you know, this is another attack on the black man. And one of the benefits...
What's your response to that?
I was going to say that. One of the benefits of actually being a professional debater as a lobbyist. And I tried to keep all that out of this, but I didn't recognize that I would actually need those skills, is that we've actually come up with counters for all those, because they don't tend to be pretty original. So the first one is Hugh Hefner. What people don't understand is that feminist groups have been protesting the Playboy Mansion since the 70s. Mm-hmm. There have been several attempts to sort of go in there and dismantle some of the allegations against Hugh Hefner, so that's nothing new. In addition, Hugh Hefner produced a periodical that was under FCC guidelines, so those models had to be 18.
Sure. As we wrap up, Kenyette, it appears the concert will go on.
Yes.
What's next for the Mute the R. Kelly campaign?
Well, right now we're attempting to mute R. Kelly in Birmingham and Memphis. I mean, those concerts.
So you're following him as on this tour?
Yes. The Mute R. Kelly campaign anecdotally has resulted in some of the concert cancellations, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Vegas, Los Angeles, and Dallas have been canceled. And we're going to take this to a larger platform of addressing underage sex trafficking in Atlanta.
Kenyette Barnes is the organizer of the Mute R. Kelly campaign. Kenyette, thank you for coming in and taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Support for WABE comes from Children's Museum of Atlanta, presenting Blue Man Group Making Waves through September 4th. You can discover the art and science behind music during this multi-sensory exploration of sound. Grandparent memberships available. ChildrensMuseumAtlanta.org. And from Emory's Goisueta Business School and their MBA for Executives Weekend and Modular Programs. Designed for today's executive, application deadlines are approaching. You can Google Emory Business School to learn more or request information.
Community issues are what drives the conversations here on Closer Look. I'm Rose Scott. Tell me what's happening where you live. Send an email to rose@wabe.org. Again, that's rose@wabe.org. This is member supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta. And Closer Look continues now here on 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott. It's still summer, and it's Friday, which means our summer indie music series continues. Today's artist did something old school. He heard about Closer Look's music series, and he dropped off his CD. Well, here's the rest. Rick Wilkerson, welcome so much. Thanks for coming in. I really appreciate it.
I'm so glad to be here. And like you said, it's taking it old school.
You did old school. You said, I'm going to drive up to public broadcast in Atlanta and drop off a CD. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, one of my friends, he recommended that I do it. Nduka, he's a great artist in town himself. So I'm going to tell him the same thing. He should come up here and let you guys know what he's doing as well.
But here's what's interesting, though. You've worked with a huge star like Keith Urban.
Oh, yeah. That was fun.
How did that happen? Let's back up a little bit, because what's interesting about this is that you live in Nashville, right?
Yes, ma'am.
But you come into Atlanta because this is the music scene you want
to
be in?
Yeah, this is the place to be versus being in a city where maybe the genres that I do aren't highlighted as much and you have to create your own way. So it's a big thing that's going on right now. Everybody's creating their own culture behind the type of music that they want to play. And Atlanta has what it is that I'm looking for as far as an artist, the hip-hop, the jazz, the R&B.
Because when we think of Nashville, obviously we think of country.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's a little bit hard for a guy that wants to do a little mixture of jazz and hip-hop to get seen and heard in Nashville.
Yeah.
How tough is it?
It's pretty tough. There's maybe one or two dedicated jazz clubs, and there's no R&B clubs, and there's definitely no places where it's a hip-hop scene and they only do hip-hop. So Atlanta has hip-hop stations, they have R&B stations, and a few of my friends were telling me they have jazz stations there too even. So it's tough in Nashville, but that actually makes it funner because one, you don't have to be in front of as many people at all times. Mm-hmm. You can kind of try out some of the things that you want to do and some of your ideas. You can get it wrong. You can get it right. Whatever it is that's going to happen, it's going to happen. And then you can unveil it to a larger audience. So I kind of had to get myself together before I came to Atlanta because y'all got real scene.
Speaking of getting it together, you are a percussionist.
Yes.
How long you been playing?
Since I was around 12, I picked up the sticks. And I've always enjoyed music, but I didn't really get serious with it until a few years after that.
Why age 12? What was going on? What were you doing before then?
I was playing a lot of sports.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, just like you. Yeah, I was out there hooping, playing basketball, playing soccer, just running around, being energetic, being crazy.
What is it about the drums, man, that gets you going?
The rhythms. Yeah. For some reason, I don't know what it is about just rhythms in life. I hear a lot of rhythms walking on the street or just chilling in the car. My girlfriend says I play on the steering wheel a lot. I don't believe her. But, this everything in life starts with a rhythm, mm-hmm. Heartbeats and you know, the cliche stuff, you know, all that stuff. But, yeah, rhythm for some reason.
The rhythm.
It just feels good.
When you're composing, the rhythm comes mm-hmm. to you first internally?
It's all different. I equate creating music to cooking.
Really?
Yeah. If you want to eat a meal and you don't have a lot of time, you throw it in the microwave and keep going and eat in the car. If you have a little bit more time, you got, 30 minutes, you go, okay, I can make a nice little something. But if you got overnight pot roast or whatnot, a crock pot, whatever it is, you take a lot more time. So that's what I do whenever I sit down to make music. Sometimes it's a busy day and I don't have time, but I just need to do something. So I'll throw an idea down really quickly.
What's that process like for you, particularly because you're the drummer, so you're starting with that groove,
yeah.
And then are you writing the other?
Well, sometimes it starts with the beat.
Sometimes,
really? Yeah. Sometimes it's rhythmically driven. So, yeah, it's more about the rhythm. I took a rhythm and a motif, and I decided to keep it going the entire time. But changing up the feel here and there for the vocalist and the rapper, but mainly it's rhythm. Sometimes I'll start with words. Someone will say something, and that'll spark a whole idea. Sometimes it'll start with a melody. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll be a mood that'll
Let's
create
talk about
me.
Mood.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk about mood, because I've heard a lot of artists,
yeah.
They say the mood is what gets
right.
them first,
yeah.
Or sometimes the climate of the nation or what's happening in society, social justice, politics.
Man.
Is that the same process for
you? Do
you
want to start down that road of politics and music and all this stuff?
If it motivates you to write something, why not?
I don't want to lose people at the same time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to preach on anyone. And I also don't
want anyone. But music and social justice and politics, that's
history. It's all intertwined.
Yeah, it's all intertwined. That's nothing new.
But I don't want to drive people away with my music. What I want to do is I want to bring people together, to unify people. And that's what music should do. It's a unifying mechanism. And sometimes it can be used in other ways, but music is love. Music is peace. Music is joy. Music is caring about other people. It's a relationship, talking to other musicians through your instrument. So what we say to everyone else and to each other is in a very critical state as far as what we're doing right now for the world. And I would like to say something positive.
Well, and speaking of your music speaking to other musicians, Phil Moore was with you today on bass. How did you all hook up?
Just through different homies.
Yeah.
Different actually, homies.
Yeah. No, just different musicians.
Don't let Rick tell you that. That's not the truth, okay?
We've always been best friends from day one,
yeah.
Minute one.
Rick and I, we originally met at an audition for a soul artist in Nashville.
Oh, man, yeah. We did.
You forgot, Rick?
Oh, I forgot.
That's your homie. You forgot.
Well,
you
forgot about that.
Humble beginnings.
We were there all. I think we might have been the only ones that showed up for that audition.
Yeah.
So we had the gig.
So you got the gig.
Needless to say, we got the gig. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was strange because we only saw each other maybe once after that for like 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we just became best friends. We were like, hey, man, we both from Mississippi. Whatever, we start hanging out and
you connect. You connect
drums
musically.
And bass. Yeah.
Drums and bass. Yes. Yeah.
How long have you been playing bass, Phil?
I've been playing bass for almost 20 years. Yeah.
Man, you're old. I mean, I'm not old, you're old.
I want to talk about being independent artists. You know, that's the whole focus of this series here on Closer Look. And we ask all the artists the same thing. Look, they would love to have, you know, maybe a little bit more fans. I don't know. And, of course, when you're with a major record label, you have access to resources that you might not have when you're independent. But they all say the same thing in that they don't want to risk giving up any of their creativity. They don't want to risk giving up their image or their look because right. they don't want to be put in a box.
Right.
Is that the same for you all?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm not going to sell out to.
But there's nothing wrong with being on a major record label, right?
Nothing at all. But the conversation I had with friends yesterday was music versus entertainment. Do I want to make music? Or do I want to be an entertainer? If I want to be an entertainer, cool, yeah, I'll sell out. This is what it is. Sorry, I shouldn't say sell out. But
your
I
words.
Will write my name on a piece of paper, get a few million dollars, and do what they tell me to do for 5 or 6 albums, and then try to be creative. But every entertainer always runs into a certain point where they start to want to be creative. And we see those battles. We see the Frank Oceans. We see all these people where they, I want to get out of my deal. So sorry, you signed the line. So I would rather just stay here versus spending a few years under someone's management and then wanting to come back here.
What about you, Phil?
I think it depends on, you know, how much you actually experience and your experiences. That definitely makes a big impact on, you know, when it is that you finally realize that you haven't done enough for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and you spend enough time, you know, doing for everybody else or doing what you're doing in order to see this or get to this place. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, after so many tours and after so many shows and after so many whatever, it's like, who am I? You know, so some artists don't experience that. We have good artists who, you know, have good upbringings and good families and good mm-hmm. surroundings, and they don't experience that. But a lot of people, we've seen the major people, a lot of those, you know, hit those hard times, you know, and you don't understand, you know, what is going on. But some of that is because of that, you know, they don't spend enough time on just doing what they're doing because it's what's in them.
And let's talk about the genre of jazz, because we all know that jazz, for whatever reason, it seems to be still more popular overseas. This is an art form that was created in this country. An art form that was created in this country, but seems to be more popular. So when you talk about jazz, Rick, is it even tougher to get noticed? Because
it's just
a genre. You mentioned radio stations. Unless there's a station in the city that is dedicated to jazz, you know, how do folks hear about a new artist or an up-and-coming artist?
Money. You pay money to whoever you need to,
that's called payola. That's illegal, Rick.
Well, not directly to the radio station, but different companies that'll market for you. If you can't do that, you do it on your own all the way up until then. So do what you can with what you have until you can't do it anymore. And
who are your influences?
Who are my influences? Musically?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, man. A long time influence. First record I ever bought with my own money. Herbie Hancock, Headhunters, and Herbie Hancock, the Thrust album, those two albums. So that kind of shaped my jazz fusion funk world for a long time. I also did the marching game for a long time. That's how I ended up doing the Keith Urban thing. Mm-hmm. One of the groups that I march with, they got contracted to be in the video. I wasn't in the video, but I was on the stage doing the tour with them, and it was fun. They did a lot of different drum lines. Around the nation, and we were the one for Nashville. So to step out on stage with a star like that, that was really cool.
Nothing like a drum line. Let's talk about the song you all are going to perform in just a moment. Mm-hmm. What's it called? What's the inspiration
it's
behind
called,
that?
What is the inspiration behind it?
Yeah.
Relationships. Once again, music is all about relationships. And this one is once you realize that you're finally free and you're happy, a few months after what it is that you've been through or you've had that time to heal, you can then go back and process and see that maybe it wasn't so bad after all. But, you know, everything is shaped by love. So, of course, love is in there. And just the feelings that go behind the different things. Pretty much every song on my record is that way. Just the different feelings behind this season in your life. Thank you.
I noticed on your album you did a cover of Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah.
What made you tackle that?
I have no clue.
You just woke up and said, let me grab this Tears for Fears from the 80s. And
Well, my mom, she loves rock. She's we really groove on different types of music in our household whenever we were growing up. Once we could start really listening to music and we liked stuff like Queen and just stuff you wouldn't expect a black family to sit around and listen to.
No, I don't know now, because I grew up on all that.
I mean, I know you know, your culture. Your dad was a jazz musician, so I know your culture. But, you know, you wouldn't first expect to hear something like that on a jazz record. I wanted to do it, but I wanted to do it in a special way. I've heard it throughout my life, and it's always just brought me a really great feeling. And of course, you know, the political stance behind it, and the power and the struggle of power. So I thought it was a good addition, and I put it on the EP and I put it on the record.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I want to go to space.
Okay, now, Rick,
talking
about playing.
They have companies where you can...
You're going to take the set up in space?
You can go to space.
You can
buy a ticket and you can go to space.
SpaceX. Okay, but...
If that's a possibility, I want to experience that once in my lifetime. I've always wanted to be an astronaut, but I don't like math. I just... Counting to four is enough for me, and I'm good, okay? to be able to have the feeling of flying on top of being outside of Earth, to know that it's real, it's really round. That's where we live. We're thousands and thousands of miles away to experience weightlessness.
Okay.
To experience coming back and being alive, appreciating life.
And let's put the space exploration
right,
to the side
course,
for a second.
Besides space.
But musically.
Musically.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Hey, you asked. I'm just saying.
You know, go with that. You know what? You're right. I
bet you nobody said that yet.
You are absolutely
correct.
Exactly. And you know what?
We're going to start with skydiving. Let's start there.
I mean, of course. In 5 years, man, who knows?
Yeah.
Of course, overseas.
Yeah.
There are so many festivals that I've always wanted to play my entire life. I've gotten to play a really cool venue here or there, but to be at a festival where thousands of fans are enjoying my music, something like the North Sea Jazz Fest or...
But Atlanta has been the place for a lot of independent artists. They tell us this every time they say Atlanta is a great place. And the independent artist community is so tight.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I hear.
It is. The jazz community is.
Yeah,
you're
in
great
company.
I have a lot of great friends here. A lot of good venues here. The scene is cool here. People get out on a Wednesday night. I am waiting until I am really, really good to go into Apache on a Wednesday night and sit in.
You don't think you're good enough to go into the Apache?
I'm scared.
You got to get out of that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You talking about going to space? You
yeah,
can't go to the Apache
space
downtown Atlanta.
Space is a little
Atlanta.
Bit easier than going into a city and playing music with the cats who've been here. You know.
Oh, I know.
You have certain relationships that you have. It's one thing to walk into a place and everybody knows you. Oh, yeah, what's up? Okay, I'll come see
you. And
you're
the
blah.
New cat.
If like, I'm a nobody who didn't even.
Not a nobody. You're the new cat.
Okay, I'm the new cat.
And they say, what you got?
What you got? Yeah. It's, It's scary, man. It can be scary that first time. Man.
But you know what you can say?
Yeah.
I played with Keith Urban.
Well, I could say that. Indeed.
The name of your latest project is Mosaic. Rick Wilkerson, thanks so much for coming in and taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for bringing Phil on bass.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Did you miss today's show? I got you. You can catch up on all the interviews you missed at wabe.org/closerlook. And let me know what you think. Tweet me at WABE Rose Scott or send an email to rose@wabe.org. This is member-supported 90.1 WABE Atlanta.
My name is Kathy and I work in the West End neighborhood. I've been working in the West End since 1995. The most change that I see over in this West End is that they're putting in a few stores. So far, not that much difference. They've done some beautification as far as planting trees and little artwork and stuff on the sidewalks and in the middle of the streets in some places. You know, you have all the colleges down the street. You have the Wren's Nest right down Ralph Abernathy. This is the historical West End.
That's it for today's edition of Closer Look, which of course is produced by Candace Wheeler, Ebony Lemon, and Finley Foxen. Our engineer is Elizabeth Eads. Our executive producer is Christine Dempsey. A special thanks as always to the entire WABE News team, as well as our digital services crew. If you missed any of today's show, you can find the entire program at wabe.org/closerlook. You can now listen to Closer Look weeknights at 9 p.m. We're back this Sunday at 1. Stay tuned to 90.1 WABE, Atlanta's choice for NPR. I'm Rose Scott.